This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we've seen an outcry from many African countries about this video that we've seen on CNN documenting alleged abuses and slavery auctions inside Libya. And now France has demanded an urgent UN Security Council session on human trafficking in Libya.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. We'll have full details of this story coming up. Also, former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe have been granted immunity from prosecution. A new privately funded Museum of the Bible that just opened in Washington, D.C. is being called controversial by some. And here in the U.S., many Americans are celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the African Union condemns the abuses of migrants in Libya and calls for a stop to torture and slavery as France is seeking an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council to discuss the alleged sale of African migrants as slaves. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the international call to stop the abuse of migrants.
Yes, we've seen an outcry from many African countries about this video that we've seen on CNN documenting alleged abuses and slavery auctions inside Libya. And now France has demanded an urgent UN Security Council session on human trafficking in Libya because the French President Emmanuel Macron is concerned about human rights abuses and human trafficking there. So pressure is growing for greater action. This pressure from African countries who are also outraged by the torture and the violence that we've heard about coming out of Libya. These are huge issues in this area and of concern both to the European Union and to African countries.
Also, I understand that Libya has repatriated migrants going back to Cameroon.
Yes, this is an operation that is being conducted by the International Organization for Migration, which is a UN, and we've seen thousands of migrants repatriated from Libya, many from Nigeria in the last couple of years, more than 10,000, and thousands this year. They're going back at the rate of around 500 a week in this major operation, and Italian media have been reporting that 250 migrants in the latest operation were repatriated from Libya to Cameroon through this particular service. And many of them have spoken about the living hell that they experienced in Libya. One migrant said, "I would not advise my worst enemy to go there. The conditions are just so bad in these holding centres that are being run, often run by local militias who are perpetrating violence, torture, and other abuses there."
Also, the UNHCR has a new report out regarding migrants. What does that report tell us?
Well, the UN Refugee Agency has produced an interesting report showing that migrants and refugees are choosing different ways to reach Europe. The director of the European Bureau, Pascal Moreau, said that over the past few months, the sea route to Greece is becoming more popular as we've seen the arrivals to Italy diminish. So they're looking for new ways to reach Europe. The number of crossings from Libya to Italy has dropped, with some 21,700 people arriving by sea between July and September. That is the lowest number that we've seen in Italy for the same period in the last 4 years. So an increased number of those arriving in Italy are departing from Tunisia, Turkey and Algeria. And the top three nationalities arriving in Europe via the Mediterranean routes are Moroccan, Nigerian and Syrian. But we're certainly seeing an increase in the number of arrivals in Greece. So some changes there, and the European Union is also keen to invest more resources to close the migrant corridors in the central Mediterranean and create greater stability. So it'll be interesting to see if more funds are allocated to countries like Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, Niger, Chad and Mali, which is what the President of the European Parliament, Antonio Tajani, was proposing today.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. And former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe have been granted immunity from prosecution. An official in the ruling ZANU-PF party and a Harare journalist confirmed the development to VOA's Zimbabwe service today. Mugabe has been negotiating terms of his retirement with Zimbabwean generals and political leaders who forced him to step down Tuesday after 37 years in power. Mnangagwa returned to Zimbabwe yesterday after spending about 2 weeks in exile. The Speaker of Parliament says Mnangagwa will be sworn in as the country's new president tomorrow. And standing by live from Harare, we have VOA's Anita Powell. Thank you, Anita, for joining us.
Hi.
Yes, Anita. So what's next for the new president after being sworn in tomorrow? I know he's spoken to people in Harare. What are his promises to the people?
It comes down to three words that he repeated over and over again. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what Emmerson Mnangagwa said he's going to deliver to the people of Zimbabwe. That's what he said last night in his speech. He also said this is a new era for Zimbabwe. And it just indicates that perhaps, you know, Zimbabwe will be turning a new leaf in terms of democratization and possibly bringing in some of the constitutional reforms that the former government, the transitional government, agreed on.
What is he saying about the elections coming up? Will they go as planned?
We haven't gotten an indication yet. The Constitution is very clear on this. It says elections have to be held next year at some date around mid-year, kind of in July, August. And so far, he hasn't indicated whether that will happen or not, but the consensus is, at least in Harare, that that does need to happen. That the Constitution is the supreme law of the land and that they need to follow it. So there will be a lot of pressure on him to hold elections on time.
What's the mood right now on Harare's streets with the pending swearing-in tomorrow?
It is just magical right now on the streets of Harare. The spirit is just evident. And Zimbabweans are just suddenly unencumbered. So people are very, very optimistic about change. However, underneath that optimism is a deep undercurrent of maybe suspicion and anxiety that, after all, Emmerson Mnangagwa was Robert Mugabe's right-hand man for 40 years. So what is really going to change?
Also, has there been any reaction to the being granted immunity for Robert and Grace Mugabe from prosecution?
So it's interesting because even people who are not fans of Robert Mugabe today on the streets of Harare told me that the old man deserves rest and dignity. So when greeted with the news that he was granted immunity, many Zimbabweans, even those who opposed him, said, well, that's a...
Apparently, we have lost sound with Anita Powell. That was Anita Powell reporting to us from Harare in Zimbabwe. Well, the world's best-selling book is the Bible, but the Holy Manuscript has been interpreted in different ways by different religions. In Washington, the new privately funded Museum of the Bible opened to the public last Saturday. Located near the U.S. Capitol, the $500 million museum features ancient artifacts, interactive displays, and Bibles from over the centuries. But as we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, the museum is also controversial.
Not surprisingly, the Museum of the Bible contains many different Bibles, and there are songs about the Bible, stories from Hebrew texts like the Dead Sea Scrolls, even contemporary fashions with biblical themes. For a museum founded by a conservative evangelical Christian, there is surprisingly little about Jesus. Tony Zeiss, the museum's executive director, says the focus is on the Bible because its teachings help people navigate through life.
Lessons to be learned there. So we're concentrating on its history, its narrative, and its impact. We would like for them to personally commit to becoming more engaged in this amazing book.
He says the museum is non-sectarian, and more than 100 scholars, representing various religious points of view, designed the exhibits, which fill several floors in the large building. There are colorful state-of-the-art interactive displays.
That your souls and hearts are in heaven.
To both educate people and keep them entertained, even in the elevators. And they can also stroll through a recreation of Nazareth, the town where Jesus grew up, amid hand-painted trees and the sound of birds singing. Seth Pollinger is the museum's director of content.
It's meant to create a setting where when you walk in, you feel like you're in a different place, a different world in the sense, you know, that you would find 2,000 years ago.
The museum was founded by Steve Green, a conservative evangelical Christian who has spent years spreading the story of the Bible. It contains impressive ancient artifacts, some on loan from outside the U.S., others from the Green family's massive collection of antiquities. Some of those, it turns out, were smuggled out of Iraq and purchased by the family, who said they didn't know they had received stolen items. The Greens forfeited them and paid a $3 million fine. Green says the museum is willing to return artifacts to their home countries.
If there's any artifact that we have that they would have a claim, that's fine.
Green is president of Hobby Lobby, founded by his father, the world's largest privately owned arts and crafts retailer. In 2014, citing religious objections, the company won a Supreme Court case to deny contraception coverage to workers at family-owned corporations.
It would be hard for us as a family to try to hide what we believe. We believe this book is what it claims to be. But our role here is to present the facts of the Bible, more of it in a journalistic look.
But that's questionable, says John Fia, a liberal evangelical Christian who is the chair of the history department at Messiah College in Pennsylvania.
As much as they want to try to stay neutral, an objective take on the Bible, it's going to be very, very hard to present the Bible in that way because the Bible is always so sort of ensconced, so connected to a particular religious tradition and their way of interpreting it.
Georgetown University professor Jacques Berlinerbrau, who is Jewish, believes the museum has a hidden agenda. He directs the Program for Jewish Civilization at Georgetown University in Washington.
The idea that the museum doesn't have any intent to convert people to a particular reading of God, of Jesus Christ, of the Scripture, is absurd.
And Fia sees a hidden agenda in the decision to place the museum in the nation's capital.
It's hard to see this as anything other than an attempt to try to bring Christian values and the Bible's teachings as understood by evangelical Protestants like the Greens into the center of American political life and American cultural life.
Museum officials welcome the skepticism and are encouraging people to come to the museum and decide what they think for themselves. Deborah Block, VOA News.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 19 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe have been granted immunity from prosecution. And a new privately funded museum of the Bible that just opened in Washington, D.C. is being called controversial by some. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Well, today is the American holiday of Thanksgiving and the annual pardoning of the White House turkey each year by American presidents. It's an interesting tradition leading up to Thanksgiving holiday. It is said that President Abraham Lincoln's clemency for turkey was the origin for the pardoning ceremony that is now so well publicized. VOA's Nicoletta Illick reports on this American tradition.
There are a lot of stories about the beginning of turkey pardoning for Thanksgiving, says the chief historian of the White House Historical Association, Edward Langell. Some of them, he says, date back to Abraham Lincoln during America's Civil War.
He had a son named Tad who joked with Abraham Lincoln about this pet turkey that he had who was strolling around the voting booths in 1864, and Abraham Lincoln asked him, why is he strutting around? Is he here to vote?
And Ted answered that his turkey could not vote because he was too young.
Therefore, Abraham Lincoln pardoned this turkey and forgave him from the possibility of being killed for the Thanksgiving table.
When Harry Truman was president in the 1940s, he began letting the Thanksgiving turkey go free. Almost 20 years later, in a well-documented occasion, President John F. Kennedy decided to spare a turkey brought to the White House for the Thanksgiving table. Kennedy said, "No, I think I'll pardon this turkey and let it grow."
We know that John F. Kennedy definitely began this tradition and it has continued on and off ever since.
Today, the White House gets its turkeys with help from the National Turkey Federation.
There's been an official White House turkey reception ceremony, really since Harry Truman was the first to have a public ceremony.
The procured turkeys are pardoned and often sent to a petting zoo in the vicinity. But the turkey cooked for the president's meal is bought with his own money and prepared according to his taste and that of his family. Nicoletta Illich, VOA, Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Nicoletta. Well, Thanksgiving Day in the United States is a day set aside for family feasting and expressions of gratitude for all the prosperity and goodness in our lives. VOA's Adam Phillips took to the streets of New York to ask people what it is that they are thankful for on this Thanksgiving Day.
It's a brisk and sunny afternoon in Manhattan's Morningside Heights neighborhood, and 5-year-old Ariana is clear about what she'll be grateful for this Thanksgiving Day.
I'm grateful for my teachers and all the things in the world that are, like, excellent. School is one, my family, my food, like, everything that's really important.
Are you happy for friends, too?
Well, yes, I am, because friends are a part of important things.
At a nearby cafe, Columbia University student Kate Anthony echoes Ariana's thoughts.
I'm really grateful for my friends. I just moved and started a new graduate program, and I think I'm grateful both for the new friends that I've made who have become so close so fast, and also for the friends who helped me figure out that going to school was the right thing to do. I'm grateful for my community.
Ioana Manoladaki is a Greek set and costume designer who's visiting her family in New York for the holiday. She paints gratitude in even broader strokes.
I'm grateful for my whole life, for the love I have received all through, for my excellent family, and my power to create good things to make people happy. I'm grateful for my teachers who taught me a lot, and my students who also taught me a lot. And I'm grateful for being able to understand people and forgive. And this, I think, is the essence of true freedom and happiness.
What is the relationship between gratitude and blessing?
You cannot separate one from the other. I mean, I always feel that my gratitude gives me back a blessing.
Outside the Beacon Theater, Joe DiCapua would be grateful to be blessed with a last-minute ticket to the Bob Dylan concert that's about to start. He takes a moment to share some seasonal thoughts. So what are you grateful for at this moment?
My health, the weather, something to eat, a place to stay. That things are pretty calm right now.
You're grateful for those things, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm grateful for Bob Dylan, absolutely, that I was born at a time that he's alive too. And that comes from the heart.
Miriam Winicore knows all about the heart this Thanksgiving.
Specifically, I'm having a little love affair at the moment, which is very enjoyable. And that's making me joyful and grateful and thankful. To tell you the truth, I'm 70 and he's 63. So I feel like, oh, I'm robbing the cradle. And then in general, I'm thankful that I have more than many other people do. And I'm concerned about others who don't.
Michael Richards is a homeless man who recently moved to New York. One might assume that he has little to be thankful for. But
I'm grateful that I still have another day to make things better, to keep going strong and keep pushing on and trying to survive. That's what I'm grateful for, that the Lord has given me another day each day. Even though my situation is not the best situation and I have no place to stay, I still know that I'm blessed.
Rich Orloff is thankful for a career that feeds both body and soul.
I write plays, and I've been writing plays for about 30 years, and I just feel enormously lucky and grateful that I've had the chance to follow my dream. I'm aware of how many people don't get to do that. To me, gratitude is the opposite of taking things for granted. So whether it's my health, my friends, or even, I think, ultimately life itself, I want to appreciate it. I want to recognize how extraordinary these gifts are.
And it may be that thankfulness pays back better. As one man put it, expressing gratitude is guaranteed to make that roast turkey taste even better. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.